Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman, brought to you, of course, by globalresearch.ca. I'm delighted to have Catherine Austin Fitz back on again. Catherine is an investment advisor. She's an entrepreneur, a former assistant secretary of housing and federal housing commissioner under George Herbert Walker. You know the last name. Oh, indeed, you know the last name. And she's also a former managing director and board director, a board member of the Wall Street firm Dillon Reed & Company. Catherine now is the editor of Solari.com, and she runs Solari Inc. as an online media company focused on ethical investment and preserving family wealth. My goodness, what time is more important to think about that topic and do something about it than now? So we want to talk about more about Solari.com, Solari Inc., Catherine's latest views on what's going on. Oh my goodness, so much, Catherine. And you focus on it so well. When I go to Solari, Doug, welcome, by the way. Oh, it's terrific having you back. When I go to Solari.com, oh, you've always got such terrific stuff there.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like a bountiful buffet. Now, what do I want to look at first?
Probably the, if you already know us, you want to look at the blog. We're covering current events with a focus on investment and family wealth. And so I would start with the blog if you know us. If you don't, you might want to start at the homepage and just do a quick tour of about us so you know who we are.
Well, you've got a dilly, I believe it was on the homepage, about, oh, my goodness, they would never do something like this. Goldman Sachs secretly bet on the housing crash. They would never do that, would they, Catherine?
Well, it's amazing because, you know, on one hand, you've got your bond salesman hawking securities to people, both in the United States and then through the Cayman Islands around the world. And they're selling people one kind of paper while, on the other hand, you're making bets that paper's going to go down in value.
What do they do?
So you're selling paper to people that your own actions say that you think is going to decrease in value.
So by betting on the crash, they shorted the stuff they were pawning off to other buyers?
It's not clear to me that it's been proved that they were shorting. I suspect at the right times they did. But the crash didn't come because of a bear raid or a shorting expedition. It may have in the short run. The crash came because the paper being issued was non-economic and I believe, in many cases was fraudulent. So when you sell, you know, if I were to sell you a can of sardines in which the sardines were rotten, at some point the market's going to crash because the sardines have no economic purpose. They're rotten. That's what they were selling what's called trading sardines as opposed to eating sardines. So the thing crashed because it should have crashed. It crashed because it was fraudulent. Whether it was fraudulent because at the heart of the whole housing bubble was the problem that I illuminated in the mid 90s and was the problem all along. When you encourage people to take on debt at the same time you're moving their jobs and source of income abroad, you're going to have a pincer movement where their overhead's going to be rising from debt service while their income is dropping, and so the thing's going to come in, you know, it's going to end in bankruptcy.
Yeah, let's take a break and we'll pick up on that when we come back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to the News Hour. On with Catherine Austin Fitz. Catherine, you know this stuff better than most, having been an insider both in government and on Wall Street. And one of your articles you wrote back in February on the financial coup d'etat, I've quoted you from that article several times. It's a real eye-opener for people who they may suspect that all is not quite correct. A little bit of rotten can of sardines or something rotten in Denmark. Something indeed is right. When you lose your home and you lose your job and you lose your savings and you just don't know what the devil is going on, and people in high places say, well, we have everything under control. Things are getting better, but not for you. Then you have to suspect something is bad. And you talk about in this article how back in 2001 you attended an investment conference in London. And let me just read a couple of things you wrote. And you said, as we began talking about, the Washington-Wall Street partnership engineered a fraudulent housing and debt bubble, illegally shifted vast amounts of capital out of the U.S., used privatization as a form of piracy, a pretext to move government assets to private investors at below market prices, and then shift private liabilities back to government at no cost to the private liability holder. Oh, boy, I guess if you're in high places and have friends also there with you, Catherine, the rule of law doesn't apply to you. It only applies to other people, and you're free to milk them for all you can get.
Right. It's we're watching a system in where the insiders literally believe they are not subject to laws, including the constitutional framework. So I'll never forget, I was assistant secretary at the time, and this was in 1990, and I had a meeting of the regional administrators at HUD with the secretary, Jack Kemp. I'll never forget it. It was his birthday. And he got very angry at one of the regional administrators who had implemented a policy that he didn't approve of. And the regional administrator looked at Jack and he said, I had no choice. That's the law. I had to do it. And Kemp literally was foaming. It was one of the times I saw him when he was angry. He was a very temperamental person. And he said, I don't have to obey the law. I report to a higher moral authority. I do not need to, I do not need to pay attention to the law. And he was outraged that this guy thought we had to follow something just because it was the law, the written law. And there was a clear sense of, we're part of the New World Order and we can do whatever we want. And we don't have to pay attention. Those are details. And I was sitting in a meeting with the general counsel, Frank Keating, who later became the governor of Oklahoma, and then I believe he now still represents the insurers in Washington. And we were discussing whether or not to cancel a program called coinsurance. And so I had insisted when we did that we take a series of actions that would protect the FHA fund and protect the honest co-insurers and just protect the portfolio, because a lot of money and complicated transactions were involved. And so I came forward with sort of a list of things that would protect the fund and the taxpayers. And Jack, the secretary, asked for other input. And Frank Keating, I won't use the F word, but he did, and said, he said, fruit them, Jack, just fruit them. They're sleazy co-insurers. And Jack said something to the effect of, well, we have contracts. I mean, they're laws and we have contracts. And this is the general counsel speaking, and he says, fruit them, Jack, by the time they win in court, we'll be gone.
Oh, I believe that. I mean,
right.
They simply don't care.
It's like a swarm of thugs who are completely outside the law and out of control. If you can fathom that is what's going on, there's a wonderful video that someone did about Enron that shows the California, the traders californing the California mortgage, power market in a way that is completely fraudulent. And they're literally destroying healthy businesses and killing people in essence because, in situations like that, you have heart attacks and die. And they think it's funny. They think it's funny. So this is all about you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And this is all about, you know, can I get away with it? And if I can, and if you look at the sort of infrastructure that's in place to help them get away with it, they can, you know, they're going to. So this is raw power, and that's what it's about.
And they even eat their own, which is sort of the way that this crisis exploded a year ago, September, I guess it was, earlier on Bear Stearns, and Lehman Brothers went down in September. Oh, I don't think there's any question in the world that they were both targeted for destruction.
Well, they were both cannibalized. You have a financial industry that has far more capacity than is needed, and it's much bigger than we need or what a free market would allow, because it's being subsidized. It's massively subsidized by the Treasury and the federal credit. And so the question is, if you're massively pumping up and subsidizing something that has no real economic purpose, then it becomes a parasite, like a tapeworm is the analogy I use. And then the question is, how do you regulate it and control it? And when things go through the down cycle, you're going to have financial cannibalism. And that's what we saw. We saw J.P. Morgan Chase and Goldman and some of the others propped up by taking down Lehman and Bear Stearns. Now, you know, you're talking about, sort of the unproductive eating the unproductive. So it's hard to have any sympathy for anybody involved. But, that's what you're watching. If you look at the takedown of Bear and Lehman, and you have all sorts of criminal financial schemes going on, from naked short selling to other, other funny games. And it's clear that it's the environment on Wall Street has really turned to dog eat dog, because if they're making money in ways that are criminal, how do you protect each other from behaving with criminal ways towards each other?
But they're so powerful now, Catherine. Over the years, consolidation has made the big firms that much bigger.
I refute that. I don't believe it at all. I think their power is as good as the general support that they get from the population. And I think what each one of us has to do is we have to take responsibility for the situation, not because it's our fault necessarily, it may or may not be, but because that's how you get power over something. And the reality is if a broad group of Americans said, we won't tolerate this, we don't want to know the people at Goldman Sachs, we don't want to have them at dinner, we're not going to have brokerage accounts with them, we're not going to do business, we're going to try and persuade our university not to do business with them, we're going to try and persuade our municipality, our state and local pension funds not to do with them, we're going to shun them, and you know something? We don't want to date them, we don't want to have sex with them. You know, the Lysistrata strategy? If wholesale shunning went into place, these guys would be shut down in a matter of weeks.
Well, I agree.
So
I don't believe they've got
the power. I believe we've got the power, but it's time we took responsibility and exercised it.
When enough people get determined enough, Kat, you're absolutely right. When enough people get determined enough and they simply will not give up until they win out, it can take many years. They will win out. This is the way popular battles are won. The problem is there's too much indifference in the country. So people are upset, and you hear a lot of nasty comments about the banks. There was a big get-together here in Chicago. I forget the exact name of it, but a couple of weeks ago, whenever. There were thousands of people on the street of Chicago protesting outside.
Okay, so I'm going to be a bad guy.
Bankers came.
In the mid-90s, I left the Bush administration and said the fascists are going to kill us all. We need a plan. So I went off and created a firm, and we went to work figuring out, okay, how could we turn this around? How could private entrepreneurs in communities turn this around in a way that would build greater wealth? Okay, because we needed greater wealth. We needed wealth in our pension funds to take care of the retirements. We needed wealth to back up the promises we made in Medicare and Medicaid. So we needed greater wealth. And so I went to work on that problem. And by the mid-90s, I was part of a group of wonderful people in Washington, honest government officials, all sorts of honest business people coming forward with solutions that said, here's how we can rebuild America, here's how we can rebuild our infrastructure, here's how we can use new technology to make ourselves much more productive, here's how we can here's how we can revitalize America. And what we ran into was everybody wanted to have a party where we acid stripped and pumped and dumped America and moved all the money into the emerging markets. And frankly, a lot of people were making money at it. And part of the way we financed it was by bubbling the economy with a housing and consumer debt and government debt bubble. And, you know, over a period of 15 years, I tried to engage with literally thousands, if not millions, of America through radio shows, through articles, through talking with my family. And what I found was the majority of people were making money and didn't care. And that's not Goldman Sachs, and that's not Wall Street. That's just all of us. We didn't care. So this comes down to, when are we going to care? And, you know, yes, as soon as we get burnt and thrown off the Titanic, then we start to care. But taking responsibility and making a real shift means we've got to look at why all this time we were happy to have a party and we didn't care.
Well, again, I agree fully, Catherine. In the 90s, everybody in their 401ks and so on were making money. So, you know, the stock market goes up. Who can get angry? You don't want to lose money. But a lot of people are going down with the Titanic now. So I hope that anger is out there and will surface at some point. But let's take another break.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour. On with Catherine Austin-Fitz. Catherine, I agonize over the too great an amount of indifference in this country, but I understand that people need to feel pain before they'll react to it. I follow the events in Honduras, and I put out a new article today, a lot of detail going back to the beginning, bringing it literally up to date as of midnight last night, when I discovered stuff in the morning that I had to stop the presses, as they say, and add a few paragraphs on what happened overnight. And it's pretty much what I would have expected to happen anyway, that the so-called resolution of a deal is no resolution at all. You've got hardliners, and they're gonna run things, and they can come up with any faux agreement they want and do anything they please, which is exactly what they're doing and will. What really strikes me is there was a coup last June 28th. Just about every single day, Hondurans have been on the street protesting this and being shot and being arrested and being tortured and being disappeared. And they're going through all this, and they keep coming back. They keep coming back, big crowds in the capital, in other cities around the country. And so we have a protest against the bankers in Chicago. And then people go home and have dinner and watch a ball game in the evening, like,
Right, but I think we need to talk about how people in the United States have been shot and disappeared. And all the violent tactics that have been used. You know, we talk about these things as though they happen in another country and they don't happen here. And we've had 100 years of incredible violence and invasive surveillance and on all sorts of dirty tricks and tactics used against Americans. And it's had its effect. And I think we really need to get down and dirty about the violence in America, because people here, you know, this has been a process of Chinese water torture using violence for many years. So, for example, I've documented what happened to me. But the lesson many Americans have experienced is if you don't toe the line, it's amazing what can happen to you, and surprisingly quickly. And no one will do anything because it's so invisible and we don't talk about it. So one of the things that has to get outed around America is, what are control files? How do they get created? how are people smeared and sort of tortured in the media, and what are the dirty tricks used to impact a family's economic health, and on and on and on, because it's quite invasive and it's quite serious.
Well, Catherine, I'm aware of this, and I have written plenty on it. I've written about the FBI's COINTELPRO, destroying the Black Panthers, targeting Latino immigrants, going after Muslims, calling innocent people terrorists. I've written about 16 cases.
That's right. You have. But Americans are not apathetic. They're frozen. They're trying to figure out, how can I do something that will be effective? And that's why I keep coming back to the money, because, you know, when I was in Washington, everybody would come and protest something and walk up and down on the mall. And our attitude was, look, as long as they have Citibank credit cards in their back pocket and they're banking at Citibank and they've got their brokerage account at Goldman Sachs, who cares? As long as they're financing what we want to do, as long as they've got, you know, the money coming in. I mean, look at what was happening during the 90s. You know, all the small businesses were giving people money that they put in 401ks or IRAs, and then that money came into Wall Street to finance bringing in the franchises and big box stores that shut down all the businesses that produced the wealth in the first place. So as long as everybody was going to give us their capital and let us finance the coup d'etat that took them over, why would we care? So the reality is, the guys who are protesting in Honduras are not financing Halliburton, but in the United States they are. And so the question of how we're going to be effective is, where is our money? Where is our money? What are we supporting? Are we supporting the corporate takeover with our time and our money, or are we prepared to shift? Because I'll tell you tomorrow, if 10% of the people in America said we're pulling all our money out, woohoo!
That would be
something
kind of
amazing would happen.
A reverse coup d'etat, Catherine.
Absolutely, it is not too late to reverse this coup d'etat whatsoever. Because you know, I think it was Case who said, "They are few, we are many." So the many still have a lot more financial power than the few, no matter how much money they can print. The question is, when are we going to gather that power and put it, you know, put it to work for building wealth? Because the bigger problem we have is that centralizing wealth is shrinking it. And, you know, the guys at the top would say, look, we can envision a way of moving labor around the globe in a way that basically denigrates the value of labor, and that gives us a higher return on our capital. You'll all play along as long as you get a little piece of it in the stock market. So who cares about you? And we're perfectly capable with new technology of producing all the manufactured goods on the planet with a significantly reduced number of, you know, people. And therefore we can catch you all out. We can have a jobless recovery. Which is absurd, you know. The notion that you can have a healthy economy that can, quote-unquote, be recovered and leave everybody else hanging out to dry, in essence throwing them off the Titanic. I mean, think about that. What they're saying is a healthy economy is one where we control all the money and you're dirt poor.
It seems we're heading in that direction very strongly, Catherine. We need to take another break. Let's go back. And I want to talk about Solari Inc. as well. And the work you do there to educate people.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Catherine, you talk all the time about concentrating on community development, going local, get away from those bandits that are robbing us blind. And one of my favorite comments, and I repeat it often, is there's really a simple way to defeat the corporate media, the commercial that was just here. There's an easy way to beat them, and they're defenseless, the same way as defeating the big banks. With the corporate media, tune them out. Don't watch them.
Right.
And watch them disappear. No viewers.
Right.
No advertisers.
Right.
No corporate media.
Right. I've always found that the corporate systems are remarkably sensitive to the consumer. And it's true for Congress, it's true in the political process. When people begin to exercise their real concerns and they stick to real legitimate issues, particularly issues under the Constitution and law, it's amazing how fast the bad guys will shift to try and appease. And so, you know, part of this is just a negotiation where they will constantly shift to try and appease the consumers. But we have to stay focused on important issues. And I'll give you an example. The greatest investment in most counties, because America just breaks down into 3,100 counties, the biggest investment in most counties is our children. We raise and educate our children. And yet what you'll see in most counties is, and I'll use mine as an example, where do the children go? Well, they go off into the military and off to war. They go into the narcotics trafficking and drug dealing business. Or they go off to an expensive university and end up in a financial center and never come back. You know, so they're up there on Wall Street basically rigging the cost of capital to be inordinately expensive, if not prohibitively expensive, to the small business in the county from which they came from, and they don't even realize it. So our human capital, we're making massive investments in human capital, and then we're basically shipping it out to prison, to war, to Wall Street. And that has got to be reversed. And if you look at most communities, how can we organize in a way that makes it prosperous and wonderful for our children to have a meaningful future in our communities, in our counties, in our, you know, where is our venture capital money going? Where is our long-term equity investment going? Are we investing in a sound and prosperous future for our children? One of the things I encourage a lot of places to do is to start apprentice programs for young people so that they can go to college locally or wherever they want around the world. It's a global economy. And come back and learn small and middle-sized businesses and build a really prosperous future on Main Street. Because if that window, if that opportunity isn't available to our young people, then what are they going to do? They're going to end up on Wall Street. So I think the time has come to really sit down and say, what kind of a future are we building? And so it's time to turn off the TV sets and instead of being an observer of the corporate future, let's start to build a future that is really prosperous for the next generation.
Bring Solari.com into this and what you try to do with it, Catherine, in informing people of these important issues and the folks that you bring on and the information that you pass on. It's an awfully important service. Explain that to listeners.
Sure, I'm trying to be the Yahoo Finance for people, so it's personal and finance and family wealth for the people who know what's really going on. So, for example, in many places in America, if drugs and mortgage fraud is the most important business in your place, well, you know, then we have to have an integrated view of that along with what's going on in the so-called legal economy. So I try and look at what's really going on and the real deal, but from the perspective of somebody who's trying to be a productive citizen and build wealth in that environment. The concept is simple, but finding ways of integrating, you know, the real deal and what's really going on with the normal everyday business of the economy is something it's a learning journey. I'm sure I'm going to be working on it. And the thing I love to do is the blog, because the blog, well, occasionally I'll write an article. I've got maybe about 100 articles that you can reach through the archive and the homepage where I've gone into different subjects in greater depth. But the blog is my chance to talk about what I think is going on. We have commentaries and put up what I think is really the best and the brightest from all over the web, including some people from corporate media, because we still have really a few good people, you know, threaded in and out of the corporate media. And I think a lot of reading the media that's out there is being able to read between the lines and see what's really going on. So we have commentary, and then I put up top picks in a variety of different areas. One is money and markets, another is geopolitics, another is food and health. I spend a lot of time on food and health. To me, the greatest risk we all face is the control of the seed supply and the industrialization of agriculture and the food supply around the world, which is going to have horrible implications. I mean, what we're looking, if we continue to do really to centralize agriculture globally, what we're going to do is we're facing massive depopulation and poverty of the likes we've never seen, no matter how bad we think poverty is globally, and it is, it's very bad. What's underway with genetically modified seeds and genetically modified food is, I mean, it's a real killer, the likes of which this planet has never seen. So I tend to spend a lot of time on food, and I'm very interested in where the opportunities are in all areas, but one of which is food, which is how do we stop financing Monsanto and the other companies doing this and instead shift our money, you know, to build a secure food supply for ourselves and our families. If you look at my website, you'll see the slogan, who's your banker, who's your farmer, where's your money? And I think we've reached a point where it's not only very important who your banker is, but it's very important who your farmer is. The time has come to once again know who our farmer is and where our food is coming from, because I think it's clear the corporate food system is not safe.
Oh, it definitely is not safe, and I've had discussions on this program about it. GMO foods, the big ag giants consolidating world control, and it's a very ugly thing. And the merging at some point of the pharmaceutical industry with the ag industry to just genetically modify drugs. I mean, they can put anything they want into these things. People have no idea the substances they're taking into their bodies. So they can get you, they can get you sick, or they can kill you, and you'll never have any idea what the source of the problem was. You come down with cancer or any one of a number of autoimmune diseases. Who could ever trace it back to a vaccine that you took?
One of my favorite videos is the story, the documentary that's been done on the history and the life of Royal Rife. Jeff Renz does the audio on it, and it's very well done. And a great effort has been made to document Royal Rife's medical discoveries. He was a scientist in California, sort of in the peak of his production, was in the 30s. And he developed technologies to, ways of looking at live cells, studying live cells, and developed ways of using electronic frequencies to heal many diseases. And his technology has been essentially suppressed. And it's a wonderful example of the kind of suppression we've seen in the healthcare industry. Now we see it in the energy industry across the board. And I think it helps when you understand the extent to which the cost structure of the current healthcare industry is driven first and foremost by suppression of technology. Because if all this stuff was available and people understood it and could use it and know about it, you know, the prices would crash. So once you understand one excellent example of that, it gives you a very, very different picture of the world. And unfortunately, you know, we're walking around in the matrix. And it's a big decision for many people to leave the matrix and say, I'm going to let my mind go freely, whereas the truth is I'm not going to operate within the boundaries of what is deemed to be socially acceptable. And once you start to, to me, healthcare is and food is where you really, you know, where most people break out of the matrix. And if you can break out of the matrix, then you find a way to deal comfortably inside the matrix or outside, whichever your day-to-day life requires you to do, then things start to get very interesting and the opportunities open up tremendously. The thing that limits our opportunities, I think, is letting our mind, restricting our mind inside the matrix. That's where we can get manipulated and harvest. But if we can let our minds go freely where the truth is, but still function effectively within the matrix, you know, and there are ways to do it, because we can all go to Disney World and walk around and enjoy Minnie and Mickey and pretend that they exist, even knowing that, of course, it's a fantasy.
Well, very definitely, Catherine. People need to find new sources of information. You've got to get away from what you read in the morning paper, what you see on your TV screen. Back in the old days when I grew up, Catherine, there were no computers. For most people, or certainly, I don't know how many people have computers in the country, certainly millions and millions of people have computers. There simply is no excuse for not making a modest effort to find out what's really going on, what is harming us, and to read good material on things that really aren't that complicated, on what we can do to break out of the matrix you talk about. And help ourselves. And if we don't care about ourselves, what about our families? What about our kids? This is not getting better. It's getting worse.
Well, I think the way to approach this is, the way I think about it is, how can we constantly improve our energy in our search for better maps and our search for solutions? And, you know, so what I'm trying to do in the blog is say, okay, here's my map. Here's what's going on, and I'm constantly trying to put forward solutions, because I think the way for most people to function is to do things. We're all getting drained. So it's very important when we look at solutions or we look at ways of functioning that we don't say, you know, you ought to do this or you ought to do that, because that just, you know, that's more drained. And the problem right now is I'm being drained. I'm being harvested. We have an economic tapeworm, and I'm being harvested. And other people are being harvested all around the world. So, you know, if you look at our troubles and ills, they're nowhere as bad as people all over the planet. And in fact, a lot of our blessings have been gained, you know, in devastating ways by extracting resources from other people. So part of real solutions is taking responsibility for our own complicity in all of this. But I need a way to move forward that reverses the drain. So I need to spend my time either getting information or taking actions which will give me energy. And as I get more energy, I can use that energy to continue to make change. So part of one of the reasons I recommend to people, look, shut off your corporate media and shut off your TV and take, you know, because we need to save time. And the benefit of having a good map is it's much harder to trick people. If you look at the map I had 20 years ago, I can't tell you how many times I got tricked out of my financial wealth or out of my time because I didn't see the game. And now I'm much more immune, and it, you know, that kind of immunity saves me time because it's much harder to trick me. The other thing is I do business with lots of wonderful and ethical people who know me and I know them. And if there's a problem or if there's a mistake, then I have a way of communicating and fixing it without it draining my time or money, because there's some real trust and real competency in the relationship of whatever we're doing, whether it's my banker or the person who's helping me paint the garage, et cetera, et cetera. So when you get the bad dogs and you get the people who drain you and that you get that whole world out of your life, you start to save time. So I think we need to talk about solutions in a framework where we're using this knowledge to give ourselves energy and help us accomplish our purpose. And part of that is building financial security in a way which is healthy, not just for us, but for everybody else. Because the problem, again, if you look at the economy, the problem is the total wealth on planet Earth, in my opinion, is less than 1% of what it could be if things were optimized. And so for all of us, the question is, how do I build my financial security in a way that helps create more financial well-being for the people around me and the whole sort of financial system instead of doing things that harm other people. Because if you look at our current economy, most people in America are now making money in ways that hurt other people. It's ridiculous. You know, so we're making money working in the health industry that's suppressing all sorts of great knowledge and technology. Why are we doing that? Or we're sitting on Wall Street doing something that's, you know, harming other people. We're doing naked short selling, and it's harming other people. Why, you know, or we're on the Internet running a pornography site. You know, why are we doing that? Why are we doing things that denigrate ourselves and each other? And part of what's going to happen is a shift in consciousness where we say, because, you know, I can't stop what the guys at Goldman Sachs are doing, but I can try and stop what I'm doing. And it's going to take a shift of consciousness where we all say, you know, I don't have to do that. And I sympathize with the difficulty of that, but having been through the process myself, when I started my company in Washington, my goal was to find a way to rejuvenate the economy in a way that was win-win for all the players except for the dirty ones. When I got hit by the dirty players, I had various options. You know, I had chances to settle. And I just said, no, you know, I'm going to reinvent my whole network. I'm going to reinvent my whole life. I would rather die than make money doing things that to me are treason. And, you know, what was it the old English poet said, you know, if it prosper, none dare call it treason.
Oh, I certainly agree with all of that, Catherine. When we come back, we're about to break. Solari Inc. plays a role in this. Let's use the last segment and explain how Solari Inc. It's by subscription, but explain that to listeners. And listeners absolutely should go to solari.com and access all the information on it. Let's take the break and we'll come right back.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour, final segment with Catherine Austin Fitz. Well, even with an hour, Catherine, the time absolutely evaporates. And, of course, this is a big story. We could talk all day, all week, forever. But talk about what Solari Inc. can do for people to help in the process you're explaining.
Sure. The love of my life is the Solari Report, which is an investment briefing. It's like a high-level briefing that corporate executives get or the president gets from the intelligence agencies. And it's basically what's going on. And I do it once a week by bridge call, three times a month. So it's sort of 3 hours. Sometimes we'll have a special extra show. It'll go an hour and a half or 2 hours. And we record it and then post the MP3. So when you become a subscriber, you can listen to the whole archive. You can listen whenever you want. So I love to download these things on my iPod and listen when I'm traveling in the car, you know, traveling. But and what I do is I cover the first part is called Money and Markets, which is a sweep of all the financial and economic news, some geopolitics, you know, because it's really one thing. And so I cover money and markets, usually about 15 to 20 minutes. And then I have a section that I love called Ask Catherine, where all subscribers just put in questions. And you get the wildest questions. And, in fact, I'm going to do one show just from one of the questions. The most subscribers can not only post their questions, but they can vote on the other people's questions that they most want to get answered and push them up to the top. And the question I've gotten most recently that's the number one sort of vote getter is, how do you tell the truth and stay alive?
Oh boy, a good question.
So I think I may do a whole show on that one. Then I interview wonderful people. One segment every month is the Precious Metals Market Report with Franklin Sanders and the Money Changer, wonderful precious metals dealer and newsletter writer. And then we've had John Rubino on clean technology, James Turk on gold and silver, the founder of Gold Money. We just had William Engdahl, who I believe you've had on your shows from Germany.
Yes.
Just wonderful.
He'll be on next week.
Right, author of Seeds of Destruction, great deep knowledge of the oil and energy industry. We have one coming up I'm very excited about, James E. Hughes, who's the wonderful attorney now retired, who's written what I think is the definitive book on family wealth and how families can build and preserve wealth together. Very, very, very important book, because family wealth is really the building block of great communities and a great economy. So you can't even contemplate how are we going to have a successful economy, you know, whether in America or globally, without successful families. And then we have a section which I love called Let's Go to the Movies. I always tell people, look, in America, fact is fiction and fiction is fact. So if you want to understand these deeper issues that you and I have been talking today about how the economy works, what I do is I have everybody watches movies, and then I say, okay, now here are the parts in this movie that are really true, and here's how you can understand reality by watching these movies. What I discovered when I first got involved in speaking publicly about the deeper issues of what was happening with the corruption, I started having people coming to me and saying, well, I want to know what you know. How can I learn it without reading thousands of books? And I said, okay, well, let's go to the movies and have an entertaining time learning about how things are going on. So I love it. It's just a fabulous way to stay posted on what's going on. If you're busy and don't have time to work your way through lots of propaganda, subscribe to the Solari Report. We'd love to have you.
Oh, absolutely. And you have to come back so we can explain this more and more current information on it. Catherine,
we should talk about my favorite movies. No, you want to understand the American economy? Watch Godfather 1, 2, 3, all in
absolutely.
One sitting.
Oh, we're out of time. Catherine, my great thanks as always.
Have a wonderful day.
Oh, a stunning hour. Join us again on Monday.